Good morning. Today is Thursday, September the 21st. Last day of summer, first day of fall. Depends on which way you cut that one, I think.
Yeah, the weather's sure been showing it here, hasn't it?
Hooray. Yes. Joining us this morning is Eureka City Schools super duper, Fred Van Fleck. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning.
Did you guys have any issues with the air quality?
We did,
a couple
actually.
Weeks ago? I mean, there were some actions that you guys had to take.
We did, and we actually kept students in during morning recess one morning and before school as we were waiting to get the final report out from the air quality district. And we were monitoring it very closely to make that determination on what we were going to do with students, because if it was in the unhealthy range, we kept them inside. Luckily for us, it was just that one short morning that was like that, and then it blew out, and it was much better. I'm just thankful that that real hot day wasn't a school day, because keeping a whole class full of students inside the classroom when it's, what, here in Eureka, it was 88 or 87, whatever the number was, and no windows open because of air quality and no air conditioning, who?
Yeah, would have been like we were living somewhere else.
Yes.
That we don't want to live at.
But they have air conditioning.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah.
Our quote this morning comes from Nietzsche. What is the task of all higher education? To make a man into a machine. What are the means employed? He's taught how to suffer being bored. I would imagine from the 1880s that you would like, and you would commit to the fact that it ain't quite the same thing now as it was 100 plus years ago.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And, you know, it's really interesting looking at the research of as we become more technologically reliant on computers and so forth, where we need to be focusing our students in directions that are safe for their career path. And that's a really interesting conversation to think about and to really move forward, because what the prevailing thought is right now is if it is anything that has to do with redundancy and doing it over and over, or anything that has to do with analyzing lots of data, it's going to be a machine that's going to be doing that in the future. Anything from, and this may be controversial, from medical care, because the thought is it's going to access that database of all these different things that have happened like that and give the diagnosis. Where on the other side of the spectrum, where they think that humans are going to have the real impact as we move into the future, is when they take things out of two seemingly different areas that happened on a relatively low repetition rate and come up with novel ideas based on that. And the example that's out there with that is how the microwave oven was invented with a someone that was working on radar and figuring out how that works. That's something that a computer or a machine would never figure out. It takes that novel thought process of a human to get there. So that's where they say the future is.
Well, I would think that that would be a real systemic challenge to education. I mean, how's most history taught? Study and memorize. Don't need that anymore. You know, as long as you have a reliant source. Okay, so history now becomes more of a cultural rather than facts and discussion and details. That's a whole different, it's a different mindset for the teacher. It's a whole different experience for the student going through just that one area. Do you believe that the educational structure is able to adjust to that?
We're in the middle of adjusting to that, and the educational structure is like a huge aircraft carrier. It takes a long time to adjust course, and we're working on that. In the when we talk about the new state standards, state common core standards, and the whole idea behind teaching students how to think and process as opposed to teaching students just the facts, that's where that's rooted in, and trying to teach students about jobs that don't even exist today. And even if you think back 20 years ago, the number of jobs that are out there right now that weren't even thought of or conceived or even figment of anyone's hardly imagination that we have people out working.
Well, just look at who's advertising now. I mean, it's real simple. I mean, if you're a football fan or a sports fan, okay, how many different cell phone providers? Yep. Not the cell phone, the provider of the service. You got all those. All those internet-based loans you know, Quicken and Rocket and Cash Call and all the, that stuff didn't exist before. I mean, right. So there's so many things that are out there that you don't really have to think too hard to come up with examples of things that didn't exist before. But the interaction of people, either with themselves in their work cubbyhole or educational cubbyhole,
mm-hmm.
or interacting with folks. You know, I think everybody would have laughed, thought you were off your rocker 40 or 50 years ago if you would have said, you know, we need to have a class on communications. Not how to write a letter, not how to write, but how to talk to somebody, how to listen to somebody. The real basic essence of human communication is now gone, or it's disappearing very quickly. That needs to be taught.
Or,
and it needs to be taught in school rather than in the family structure, because...
Is it disappearing or is it changing? And I'm not going to enter my opinion on changing good for good or for bad, but I think communication in our next generation is changing from the face-to-face conversation, from that to communication via some sort of electronic device. And it has positive and negative impacts. I think I've said this to you before. Teen pregnancy is at an all-time low right now. And it's thought that
I saw something
that,
earlier this week. Trojan sales are down. What yep. are they blaming? Cell phones in the bed.
Yep.
You know, guy watching YouTube or what, you know, they used to blame Johnny.
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, it's no longer the TV set. It's these things. And texting back and forth instead of talking to somebody and getting to know them one-on-one.
Or even worse yet, when what you used to do when you showed up at an event or a place and sitting in the doctor's office or whatever and you're waiting. I was just at the dentist this morning. And what did I do when I was sitting in the waiting room?
Talk to somebody?
I got on my phone and did email.
Oh.
As opposed to before, when phones were around, people generally talked with somebody. And so the phone becomes a filler for those uncomfortable spots instead of encouraging you to go out and have that out-of-the-box conversation.
Well, or be willing to hear somebody else's opinion or discuss or learn the back and the humanity of it all.
Right.
Seems to be going the way of sterilization. Not chemical sterilization, but just a sterile communication environment. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
It's not the place they hope to be in spring training, but the San Francisco Giants have the rest of the summer to play, and they'll be bringing their exciting brand of ball to Kika Thunder Country 101.5 FM. They've got a lot of games left on the schedule against contending teams, and playing the role of spoiler is a definite possibility. Be tuned in for all the action all season long. Brought to you on KINS in part by Angelo's Pizza, Wyckoff's Plumbing, Electrical, and Hardware, and Living Styles Furniture.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck from Eureka City Schools. Fred, the concept of communication has always been challenging dealing with youngsters. You know, either they don't seem to hear mom and dad really well, clean up your room, or the message gets lost somewhere. Or the teacher says, here's your homework assignment. Oh, I don't know. What homework the next day? Or just talking to each other. You know, how many kids get into fights? Not because they're really mad, but because they are interpreting things differently. Okay. So now if we're talking about non-face-to-face communications as becoming more and more the standard, yeah, that just doesn't seem like it's a trail we want to be going down. Regardless of what societal and cultural and individual tendencies might happen to be, do you see down the road that the schools, unfortunately, because of the parental structures so often existing, are going to have to get into communication, skill development, homework, skill development, some of those real basic things that used to be either the family unit or individuals themselves because they didn't have so many options?
I mean, that's an interesting concept. The first thing that I go to is when you think about communication via your devices, you know, when you say, go clean your room, and your daughter comes back to you and says, well, I didn't hear that the next day or whatever. Now you can just say, well, here it is right here where I text you. So there's a plus of that.
Yeah, you can leave a paper trail, but that's really how you want to talk to your kids?
But let's talk about the breakdown of that. And in fact, this was one of the things that we've been focusing on in the district this year. There is so much that is lost via electronic communication, whether it's social media, whether it's a text message, whether it's an email. And when I say
faxes also. I mean, you can go
What's a fax?
Yeah, I know. Knock it off. You know, I said copier, and they start. A couple of the youngers around here started laughing. Said what? It's a printer.
Well, at least you didn't call it a Xerox.
Okay, why? And they had no knowledge of a mimeograph machine. Okay. Yeah.
How times are changing.
How we are aging.
Yes. I like to say how times are changing.
Okay. Gets us to the same point.
Yes. But anyways, the pieces that are lost, and there's some real clear research on this, that the best way to communicate by far is face-to-face.
Baby blues.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Because there's body language involved, there's tone of voice involved, and then the actual words that are being said. When you're communicating via some sort of electronic device, you lose the body language and you lose the tone, which there's been some really clear research out there that is by far the vast majority of communication. So one of the things that I really talk to my staff about at Eureka City Schools is whenever possible, communicate with parents face-to-face. If that's not possible, the second best thing is to communicate with parents over the phone. Then the worst way to communicate, well, besides not communicating at all, but the worst way to communicate is via email. Because the problem with an email or a text message is how you read that email largely depends on the mood you're in when you read it. And so if I'm angry at the world for some reason and I read your email to me, I put my own mood into that email as opposed to maybe what your intent was when you wrote that email. So that's just missed in that communication piece. And that's such an important piece that many of our next generation of children are missing out on if they're spending a tremendous amount of time communicating via their electronic devices.
Well, particularly I would think in light of all this people wanting all of their opinions to be taken at 100% value. Yeah, there's no wiggle room in there. There's no smiles. There's no winks. There's no anything. I mean, it's sterile, I guess, is the simplest way. And you take it at value. And then when you interpret the words, how you interpret the words, I mean, to me, what a shocker for everybody who's been listening for, 35 years or whatever. The term mutant is an endearing one for me. Okay. I mean, all that means to me is that you're extraordinary. You're not of the norm. Well, physically, yes. Professionally, yes. Yeah, of course I am.
Well,
most people would take mutant as a negative, you know, unless they were into turtles.
I was just going to say, that's what Winston and I think of Ninja Turtles when you say mutant.
Right. And game on, and, you know, the swords are drawn and everybody's ready to do battle. You know, what do you mean? But you could tell that, you know, if you're talking to somebody, you know, the body changes, the facial expressions, all that kind of stuff. I would think that teachers would be very averse to anything other than face-to-face because they see it in their classroom. They say something and some eyes glaze over, they should be responding to that. If some kids get really excited and pumped about it, they know what they're conveying that message. And if others start to get mad, whoops. I mean, you know, that's kind of what education comes out of, is that verbal communication.
Right.
So to get away from that, to me, would be almost against the grain of their training.
It is. But if you think about it for a minute, think about how much more convenient it is to sit down and have a one-way conversation via an email. Because you can just
10 seconds, I'm done. Yep. You can stew on it for a week and a half,
right.
But I'm done.
Right. And so it becomes a convenience factor sometimes, and I have to fight that sometimes. If it requires me to write more than about two sentences, I almost always will pick up the phone and make the phone call, because I've actually found that it takes less time to do that because you don't get in the back and forth in the emails. And since I've started doing that, my email inbox has really drastically been reduced.
Well, and isn't it kind of fun to talk to people?
It is. I mean, it is. Yes.
Particularly if they're peers or folks that you see and you work with on a regular basis. You're talking to buddies. Well, I mean, why wouldn't you want to?
And I think you get to a better decision, too, because you get that back and forth in the conversation with different ideas and different perspectives. And many times you arrive at a very different location than where you started.
Like us with the clock. It's 8:30. We'll be back.
Do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Fred Van Vleck from Eureka City Schools. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by Redek. Fred, you got a lot of stuff going on right now. We see some of it. We don't see some of it. Ange and I, great fun. One of the, for those not familiar with the Myrtletown area, at the end of Marsh Road, which is where we are, is Lafayette Elementary School. And it's always been part of the county, even though it's a city school. And county standards in most areas are a little different than city standards. You know, you got a little asphalt instead of the sidewalk. You don't have any curbs. You know, you got the dirt path on the side. Not anymore. You know, it's like the city came to Lafayette. It's really cool. And each day to see a change. And knowing that the neighborhood is going to be benefited from it. The school, obviously, but the neighborhood also. Is that one of the side benefits that you see with the construction of facilities, whether they're schools or some of the support buildings, that it kind of makes the neighborhood better?
I would say that's actually exactly like you put it, just a side benefit, because the reality of, and I hate to put it this way, we didn't do it to make the neighborhood look nicer. As much as that's a great aspect to it, we did it simply for student safety. And anytime that we can do something to help students in their safety on their way to and from school, or when they get dropped off in the parking lot, and believe it or not, the amount of students that are bused now or walk to and from school is so much lower than it was 20 years ago. Parents have a tendency to drive their children to school just because they don't want that increased risk of what may or may not happen on their way walking or
riding
a bike.
Fear and safety, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that really changes it. And so what we've been concentrating on is in all of our elementary schools having a exclusive away from everything bus drop-off area, away from everything parent drop-off area where parents drop off their children, separate from the bus drop-off, and creating safe routes across the parking lots to make sure that students get inside the classrooms safely. And I'm really happy the progress that we've made on that. The projects that we have going right now that directly impact student safety is an entrance off of West Street over there for Zane, the parking lot at Alice Burney, the parking lot at Lafayette Elementary School, and then we're in the planning stages for the parking drop-off areas for Washington Elementary School and Grant Elementary School. And those are both two more schools that are just inundated with parents in the morning, because when those schools were built, parents didn't drop their children off at school, and so there wasn't that need for that type of drop-off area.
The construction that was done, I guess the previous bond, for Grant and for Washington, made it fancier on the outside, It just didn't change the structural flow enough to be able to accommodate. So you're having to go back and kind of clean it up, so to speak?
Well, you know, I can't really speak for that time because I wasn't here. But what I can say, just armchair quarterbacking, Monday morning quarterbacking, whatever you want to call it, the priority was not put at that point toward a drop-off area. The priority was put on buildings. And I think that buildings were needed to be done. I think that they need to be modernized. They need to be fixed up and brought up to standard. But I think they ran out of money before they were able to address the student drop-off areas.
So you're just kind of gap management.
Yep.
On the two facilities.
Yes, yes, yes.
Traffic flow is something that's often overlooked. And I know you guys have got ratios and numbers and things like that that you have to abide by. But son of a gun, I mean, if you're driving one of those small little blowover in the wind cars versus a truck, they don't fit. They just are not the same. So when you're putting these things together, do you allow for regular guy vehicles? And I guess the other complaint that a lot of us have got with some of these other people driving the wrong way. I mean, you put those, I would be in favor of spikes. You know, you drive the right way,
right.
No issue. You go the wrong way, you're going to do it one time and it's over.
Right.
You will not do it a second time. Are those the types of things that you're talking about for the traffic flow through these new facilities?
So the main entrances in and out of the campus certainly will accommodate any type of vehicle that you are driving because they're designed for the buses to go in and out of those areas. So that helps quite a bit. However, some of the satellite parking lots that go off of those main areas might be a little bit tighter. I, like you, have a big pickup that I drive around, and it's very tight in a lot of locations. I think the only parking lot that really accommodates me very well is Costco. They built all their spots oversized, which is very nice. But, you know, you try to get into some of these other parking lots, and it's very tight. And I will say, as you go into the Kinder drop-off area over at Lafayette, that's one of the ones that I've noticed that is a tight corner to make it in there. And you can do it, but it's tight if you're in a big vehicle.
Yeah, I had an experience earlier this week trying to get out of the vet, and Hubbard isn't a wide road to start with, and there was parking on both sides. I literally had to back up twice in the driveway so I wasn't going to crunch one of these small little rollovers. I mean, it was
frustrating,
and I thought, oh, okay, who's parking in the bike? Nobody was parking in the bike lane. They were permitting parking on both sides, and I don't know if a delivery truck or a school bus could fit.
Right.
I mean, you just kind of look and you go, okay, so something is goofy here. And I know the engineering specs are all statewide and it's, you know, Kumbaya right. and granola and all that stuff. But it just seems the practicality of some of this stuff just isn't there.
Right.
So
right.
Did you have to put in or make allowances for so many parking spaces, or did you just have a footprint and you could make the width of the parking areas as wide as you wanted to for an individual vehicle?
We went with standard parking spots, and we do try to get a minimum number of parking stalls in each one of the schools. One of the things that was very important to us is that we didn't, when we redid the Lafayette parking lot, that we didn't lose any parking. Same thing on the Alice Burney parking lot, because there's during the school day at an elementary school, there's plenty of parking. But when you have a back-to-school night or you have some sort of event that's going on that campus, it gets very crowded. And so we try to keep those parking spots pretty high, so that way that parking isn't such a neighbor such an issue and an impact on the neighborhood.
So you don't mind if I straddle too?
No.
Thank you very much. KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:42. We'll be back with more from Fred.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. Fred, Jim, now there's not new construction going on there yet. Will there be shortly?
Correct. So the target date for the completion of the gym project is just shy of 2 years for right now. So right now we're in the 17-18 school year. We hope to start construction at the end of this school year. Construction going on all the way through the 18-19 school year with a completion of the fall of 19. So 2 years out is what we're looking at for a completion of the building. We spent a tremendous amount of time. It's been over a year going through the environmental impact report, working with our neighbors in the community, some people who were very attached to the old gym, having conversations, and the board has made their final decision that we will be building a new gym. And the Heritage Society is someone that we've worked with closely over a long amount of time to figure it out. They've been very concerned about the notion of tearing down the existing gym. And while they don't agree with tearing down the existing gym, they're not going to fight it at this point because they understand that we went through the correct process and that the gym was the existing gym was deemed to not be a historical building by a historical architect. And so we're moving forward. And so right now we're in the planning stages because we didn't start any planning at all of what the new gym would look like until we made it all the way through that environmental impact report. And so we've had our first planning meeting. Right now, the architect is drawing up some renditions based on the input that came out of that meeting, and we have another meeting here in about a week where we will be looking at those couple sample renditions.
Generally speaking, edifice, low flat, is it going to look Art Deco like some of the other buildings in the campus? Is it going to be the 15th architectural style at Chirica High? What, in general terms?
So in general terms, what came out of that committee were things like, and this is what an architect said at actually one of our board meetings, is the buildings need to be able to talk to each other. So that's a very sophisticated architectural term, I guess.
That's an easy way to grasp, isn't it? Yeah.
But anyways, I really like that statement, actually, even though that sounds kind of funny. But the point being, the building needs to tie into the campus. And I think that's become a very important point to that committee and to the board that they want that to happen. I think where the big decision lies, and I think we're going to get two different renditions that come back, and we're going to have a big decision on. So do we build a building for space, meaning one big box that has three courts in it with retractable bleachers and has the most flexibility and you can do the most things with, or do you build it for, lack of a better term, the grandeur? In other words, the balcony style seating or a sunken gym floor where you have, you walk into the gym right now, you go, wow, because you have that balcony style seating. That takes away from a lot of the flexibility of the use of the building. However, it's really nice to look at. And so
more utilitarian versus...
Yes. And so I think that's going to be the big decision that's going to be coming in front of this committee and them making a recommendation to the board. And I look forward to see what comes out of that.
Me too, man. Me too. And everybody else. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Safe travel. See everybody tomorrow.